Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
On The Advertising Show, we're going to have a super show for you today, right? Get it? Super.
Can we say Super Bowl on the radio?
We can say Super Bowl on the radio.
We just can't use it for promotional purposes.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we're just having a super show.
Gotcha.
Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. It is jam-packed with an interview. Today we've got senior editor of Forbes magazine, Melanie Wells, out of snowy New York. And we'll be talking to Melanie in just a few minutes. Also got Patrick Meyer, consumer retail shift is what he's going to be talking about today. Mary Lou Quinlan is going to be talking next hour about mom's family values. Andy Borowitz will join us next hour, and we're going to do some bad advertising too. Of course, got the wacky world of marketing too. Wow, that's a lot.
So Mary Lou is suggesting there still are family values in 2004.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, really.
Good. So there we go.
Yeah, well, look, I don't know if you can see this from there, Ray, but
very tiny.
Melanie Wells there.
Yes.
She's much better looking than Bob Garfield.
Well.
Who's been a past guest.
Yeah.
She's worked for Scott Donaton many years ago.
Has she really?
So we're going to get dirt on him.
Good.
I'm hoping.
Maybe not. Maybe she won't give that up.
Well.
That's okay.
Should be a good interview.
Very good.
Yeah.
So Melanie coming up here in just a little while on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. Remember our website, theadvertisingshow.com, where you can find stuff at the end of the show.
All kinds of stuff.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah. You can actually find the interview that we're going to do today right after the show. Through the marvel of electronics and technology.
Archive page, commercial free, just that easy.
Commercial free, the advertising show.
Can you imagine? And also you don't have to register, as a lot of websites make you register.
Right.
You just come in for free.
And we don't give out viruses either.
Not yet.
Or worms.
True. Hey,
that'd be a great promotional thing for some software.
Worms?
Mail worms to people. Real ones.
I saw in the news the other night where a lady had a 5-pound bag of potatoes and opened it up, and there was a snake in there.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, I've heard of, you know, trying to sue fast food for something on a hamburger, but I don't think this would be a setup.
Wow. The little kid. It was live or dead?
No, it was alive, and the child apparently was playing with it before mom actually realized what was going on.
Oh,
but,
my God.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's a good reason to, you know, get away from carbs. Huh?
They'll bite you.
Ray, I was in Barnes & Noble the other day getting my proverbial Starbucks, and I walk into the little magazine area that they have there, and under the category of music magazines, we have a magazine called Q, which is out of England, and another magazine called The Source. And what was common about both of them is you had Justin Timberlake on Q cover, and you had Eminem on The Source, and both of them were giving the finger.
Really?
Well, and Timberlake had the double bird going.
Oh, did he really?
And I'm sitting there going, I'm looking at this and I'm going, what kids have to aspire to today?
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But right there on the cover.
It's sad.
I mean, like, what's the deal?
Yeah.
We when we were younger, Ray, we held that out for special
occasions.
Meaning.
Yeah,
yes.
That's right.
If you use it all the time, it loses its importance.
I guess so, and I stopped using it, so.
Yes. Anyway, that was weird.
Into trouble. That's terrible.
It is weird.
And that goes with the family values things, too, doesn't it?
We're talking to a writer for Forbes, and being in the magazine business, it kind of makes you wonder about these laddie publications that you see now on the, what is it, FHM and Maxim, et cetera.
Right.
And what you see on the...
A whole different animal, too.
What you see on the cover of these publications used to be on the inside.
Exactly. Well, I want to sell the magazines.
I hear
that,
but I only read the article.
Don't think Forbes will ever go there, though.
I doubt it.
Don't think so.
Yeah.
Let's check in with Patrick Meyer now here on The Advertising Show.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Can you hear the ground shaking, the world moving? I'm talking about the consumer and the retail world shifting. What does a consumer do when they want to make a major purchase? Most of them go right to Google or another search engine and punch in what that brand is. So before they even head to retail, they're checking out a brand and everything it's about. So big problem if you're a non-tech savvy brand, a closed information brand, a less than honest brand, or a non-value sensitive brand. Big problem. Here's another factor that makes it even more challenging. Word of mouth. Word of mouth can make or break a brand even before you come out of the gate. If you sell through retailers, Walmart, Best Buy, Amazon.com, Stop and Shop, or whatever, they understand the consumer's use of the Internet for information and for purchase, and they also understand the power of word of mouth. They're demanding lower costs, looking for tech support, looking for blended retail and Internet solutions. They're looking for any kind of support on consumer behavior you can provide. And if you aren't there, there are other preferred suppliers that will step in. So you see, my friends, the time of the brand or retailer mandate is long gone. The consumer's in the driving seat. But if you want to get in the driver's seat, here's what you need to do. Number one, get to the DNA of what drives your purchase. What's driving your business today? Number two, check to see if you're transparent in what you communicate. Are you transparent? Do you let them see what they need to see to trust you, to see integrity in your brand and value in your brand and make it easier to purchase? And number three, are you compelling in your proposition? Because that, my friends, is what you need to even have a chance of capturing the consumer as they gain power.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer, and remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
Interesting. Good advice, too, from Patrick Meyer here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. You know, talking about brands, there's a thing in Ad Age this week. It says, "What's Eating Burger King?" It says brand problem, not ad problem, the experts say. In other words, they've been going through a bunch of different agencies and creative people.
New agency.
And what they're saying is they've got a 22% decline in customer traffic over the past 6 years, and they say that it lies with inconsistent quality and poor customer relations and so on and so forth. And that's so very true.
Well, certainly that has an impact on it, but one almost might suggest that the changing of agencies frequently might impact the continuity of your marketing communications program.
Boy, no doubt about it, because they've got to, you know, hey, get a new agency, get a new image, get a new brand.
Crispin is who they just selected, I believe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But again, it goes back to the product. I mean, you see some people who advertise who really shouldn't be advertising because their product and their service and everything else is not ready to be advertised. Why do people want to do that? And it, too often it goes back on the advertising, which is stupid.
Well, they want to give a lot more we hate to say this, folks, but you want to give a lot more power to advertising than what it's capable of doing, because if the product's wrong or broken, or you got to fix that first.
And sadly, agencies and some individuals are not strong enough to say, no, we're not going to do that because your product is not good enough.
You know, Deutsch mentioned in an interview that if Burger King were to call him, he wouldn't take their call.
Did he really?
Donnie Deutsch said that in an interview, maybe in that particular article, which Deutsch had a relationship. He was one of the, they were one of those agencies that were in and out over the past 4 or 5 years. Speaking of Donnie, who's a previous guest here on the show.
And Marie.
Yes, Donnie Deutsch. Apparently, he may be the new face of a reality TV program.
Well, I could see that.
Yeah.
You could see that on the What's the show that he was
well,
on?
Well, producers were so impressed with his guest spot on The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, yeah. Right.
Donald Trump's deal.
Right.
That they're apparently in talks to create a reality TV series for Donald. Now, of course, we all know Deutsch, CNBC talk show, The Big Idea, launched in Christmas Eve, and he's done very well with that.
Yes. So he may be something brand new there.
Good luck to Donnie.
Yeah. What a cool concept, too. He's got some exposure on TV already, which is good. Melody Wells up next, a senior editor for Forbes magazine here on The Advertising Show. You'll want to stick around for that. So listen to these commercials and then come back with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, The Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
No one's gonna call you a Hollywood queen. They won't think you're a model in a magazine. But show them, baby, you rate. You're really in shape.
If you've got the average figure but don't want to look average, wear the Playtex Cross Your Heart bra.
Back for The Advertising Show, Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth and a classic spot. What was that spot? Do you remember?
Playtex Cross Your Heart bra.
Is that what it is?
And I think that's inappropriate to have that on, inappropriate to have Melanie on at the same time. We could have moved that forward.
That's the roll of the dice, okay?
Yeah, well,
it falls where it may.
Yeah.
And
you know,
and that's the way it goes.
Della Famina didn't appreciate it either, you know.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But we weren't.
But Garfield did.
Well, he did. But he wanted the, he liked the thong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Melody Wells, our special guest today here on the Advertising Show, senior editor of Forbes magazine in New York, where she both writes and edits, specializing in articles about marketing. She has written an article that actually written eight cover stories since she joined the magazine in 99. They've included an article that dissected the reasons for JetBlue's financial and marketing success, a piece examining so-called cult brands, and a profile of flamboyant British billionaire Richard Branson. Boy, he is certainly flamboyant. Did you ever see him? He flies balloons as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I first heard about Richard. Recently, she wrote a cover detailing neuromarketing, or the way in which marketers are collaborating with neuroscientists to see our brains respond during consumer interactions with products and brands. And that involves, by the way, Brad, that involves a CAT scan, I believe. Is that mm-hmm. right, Melanie?
Actually, MRI.
MRI.
Which is magnetic brain resonance imaging.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And more than you wanted to know, probably. But.
Yeah. Now we know it all. So, Melanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brad and Ray.
Well, welcome and thanks for joining us. And we're going to jump into in-depth conversation about your neuroscientist article, which is, I guess, in the current issue of Forbes. Is that correct, Melanie?
It
was last fall, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, last fall. The current issue, I may say, Ray, I have right here, and Melanie sent it to us, and she does an article here that is so fascinating. It's about, well, just in a general sense, it's about stealth marketing and viral marketing, but it has to do with these kids that they have got together, they being Procter & Gamble, and they use this group of mm-hmm. Several hundreds of thousands, 280,000 actually, young kids between the age of 13 and 19 to do some really interesting things when it comes to marketing. And we're going to hold that as well till later in the interview. First, let's give our audience, Melanie, if we can, a little sense of the life and times of a typical work week for Melanie Wells, senior editor of Forbes magazine. What would it be like for you?
You're really starting with the exciting stuff.
Well, you know, everybody's going, okay, they've got Melanie on. She works for Forbes, writes about advertising. But, you know, what does she really do?
Besides have breakfast with Richard Branson and lunch with Donnie Deutsch and... well, there's some of that, too.
Who pays, by the way, when you go out with those guys?
Who pays?
Yeah.
Well, in the case of Richard Branson, I paid because he didn't have any money on him.
Mm-hmm. He's still using that excuse, huh?
Yes, he is. In fact,
yeah,
he
left my wallet
jacket
at home.
But Deutsch picked it up.
Yeah, he usually likes to pick it up.
Yeah.
He has these muscles now, so he likes to use them.
Yeah, I thought that's the only thing I didn't like about this. What is this thing with this big old tight shirt?
That's his signature, isn't it, Melanie?
That certainly is. He used to, cowboy boots
mm-hmm.
used to be his signature,
right.
But then he sort of, a stylist, I think, got a hold of him and he cleaned up his act. wardrobe act.
I had a queer eye experience. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I think so.
perhaps.
So since you do a lot of cover stories for Forbes, do you do a bit of, just kind of some groundwork in between stories? Because there is some time that goes by from story to story. A little networking with Deutsch and others?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when I'm not writing, I'm researching the next piece. And you know, it usually starts by, you know, having conversations with people in the industry, with marketers. In fact, you mentioned the neuromarketing piece I did.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do a piece on why people buy. I really wanted to, and I wanted to find some research that would sort of point to that. And I was just having this casual conversation with a guy on the West Coast, and he said, well, you know, there's in Europe, they're using this helmet to read, you know, brain waves. And just sort of that, sort of a tossed-aside comment.
Mm-hmm.
But from that, you know, I sort of pieced together a piece. It took months. But then it resulted in a cover story. So, you know, a big piece will take several months to pull together.
Well, since you whet our appetite on that, let's jump into that because I did find it very compelling and interesting. I assume that you can access that article on Forbes.com.
Sure.
And talk a little bit about, how marketers are using neuroscientists to help them identify what makes, I guess, some products more desirable than others.
You know, companies have always wanted to know, you know, what they've always wanted to make people, you know, buy their products. But what brain imaging technology like the MRI machines and even, you know, EEG technology, which does measure brain waves, is allowing them to do, it's allowing them to, you know, learn about different areas of the brain that are involved in preferences, decisions, you know, even aspirations. For instance, Daimler Chrysler, which is really at the forefront of this kind of research. I mean, it has a brain lab in Germany where, you know, neuroscientists put people in these MRI machines and show them pictures of cars to see how their brains respond. Daimler Chrysler knows as a result of this research that when we look at the front of a sports car, the part of our brain that responds to faces sort of comes alive. And when I say comes alive, it means, you know, the brain, the blood rushes to that part of the brain, probably more so in your brains than in mine, being sports cars, since you're guys. But, I mean, it's fascinating stuff, and it could help them design, you know, sexier cars down the line.
It's very interesting. I also found interesting that you mentioned in your article about how someone may say that they favor Coke, but when hooked up to this this machinery, so to speak, that they are maybe showing brain activity that suggests that they favor Pepsi, but yet from a brand standpoint, they would be more selective and erring towards the Coke brand. So apparently it turns out that memory and emotion play a big role with regard to brand loyalty.
You know, yes, they do. I mean, we've kind of always known that. But this kind of research, and the Coke-Pepsi experiment that you mentioned took place recently at Baylor in Houston, does show that our brain will react to certain brands, and it does have to do with preferences.
Well, look at what some people say in some parts of the country. They'll say, I'd like a Coke, and then the response to that would be, what kind of Coke would you like?
I grew up in the South, and we called every kind of soft drink Coke.
Right.
Yes.
Generic.
Coke is sort of the Kleenex of soft drinks.
Right. Now. Oh, that's a new tagline.
Yeah, maybe that'll help sales.
Right.
So continuing, as you were saying, about how apparently there are preferences that can come about through, I guess, it overrides the emotion of what you really like because of the identification with a particular brand.
Yes, something like that. Now, this, of course, is very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
As you might imagine, but there are companies, consultancies that are springing up. One is in Atlanta. We're talking about Coke. Speaking of Coke, that are, you know, peddling this type of brain imaging as a service to marketers. So we're only going to see more of it. I mean, I sort of predict that that neuroscientists will be the hot consultants for ad agencies and marketers in a few years.
Yeah, they'll replace the account managers or something like that, right?
well, agencies need something these days. So,
yeah, that's a fact.
Well, we're going to talk about Madison and Vine and your thoughts on that, and I thought a lot more here during the interview. All
this
right?
is true. This would be a good idea since we have three other segments this hour.
That's a good
idea. It'd be a good idea to kind of continue the conversation with Mary.
At least three questions.
Mary, well, that's fine. Mary Wells is senior editor of Forbes magazine with Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth. We got the wacky world of marketing on the way with our executive producer, Bruce Abbott, and a little bit later on this hour, it's advertising. So if you stick around, we'd appreciate it on The Advertising Show.
For the wacky world of marketing.
Wacky world of marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update comes from ABC News Online, where the Dutch finance ministry has declared white socks indecent. A ministry official has confirmed a recent internal publication that proclaimed white sports socks transgress the limits of decent dress behavior for ministry employees. The officials were also expected to wear dark blue or gray suits in order to convey reliability and professionalism. People are expected to dress in accordance with their function, says a spokeswoman, stressing there were no strict controls. Maybe that's why the guy mowing the lawn down the street always wears those knee-high dark socks. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Look what the guys on the team gave me. King of the beer friends. Well, I may not be the best at picking spears, but when it comes to picking beers, I'll pick a kingpin every time. Budweiser is the king of beers.
Back on The Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest today out of New York, it's Melanie Wells, senior editor of Forbes magazine, and we rejoin the conversation.
Yeah, Melanie, we were talking off the air. May as well talk a little on the air. How was it working for Scott Donatan, since we know he checks our archives from time to time?
You know, Scott was a pup when I was at Ad Age in 1992, but he was the youngest guy on staff, but he was the best reporter. I mean, he covered the media beat, and he was a star, but he was, you know, 12 or something. And
12?
And he's not much older now. I mean, he's still 15. Looks 12.
And that's, of course, editor of Advertising Age, if you do not know. And, yeah, you're right. You look at his picture, and he definitely looks young. I guess suggesting that he was a pup back then, you're complimenting him because he's grown into a real bulldog.
He always was, but he's had that sweet little face,
yeah.
So I think he got people to, you know, tell him everything, and then...
More of a basset hound, right? Cute.
Yeah. Hey, you know, in doing research and prepping for your interview today, our associate producer, Stephanie Saratelli, who is a whiz at the online internet research phenomenon.
You gotta watch her on that porn, Brad.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying here. Look what I have here. No, she's done a... she's got me as if I need this. September 10th, 1997, article, Melanie, that you wrote interviewing Mr. Coors, Peter Coors, who was only 50 then. And then we also have, we're not going to talk about that, that's too old, but we also have what I thought was interesting is a CNN Talkback live transcript here where Arthel Neville, the sister of the famous Neville brothers, of course.
Yes.
Arthel Neville out of New Orleans, of course, in New York at that time, interviewing both Melanie and some others about the McDonald's controversy changing their French fry recipe.
Mm. Are you just trying to tell people how old I am?
Well, no. I want to know why no one's followed up on this French fry controversy.
French fry controversy?
Well, they changed their oil and they wanted to make it more
healthy,
trans fatty acid friendly.
Yeah.
And get rid of the trans fatty acids, or TFAs, as they say.
Isn't that what French fries are for, though? Come
well,
on. Now.
But they, you know, the big controversy was they're going to change, and everybody's going to, you know, say, well, we're not going to McDonald's anymore because of the big draw. The fries, of course.
Yeah.
So why didn't anybody follow up with this and say, hey, the fries aren't...
Because the fries taste good.
They really do, don't they?
Yeah. They still taste good.
They made that happen. Well, speaking of French fries, I don't know how I transition with this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Would you like an apple pie with that?
Madison and Vine seems to be intersecting now, that being the product placements and other ways of doing advertising differently than it was not so long ago. Do you think product placement has lost its novelty, Melanie? I mean, 10 years ago, you could get something on a product on a TV program or in a movie, and it, I think, perhaps had a little more meaning because the consumer wasn't as knowledgeable about how product placement worked. Is it as effective today as it was 10, 15
years
ago?
You know, I think it's probably only more so because it's in entertainment that is getting better and better. I mean, if you watch Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, you know, they're pretty good. You know, they go to Bed Bath & Beyond. They go to Coach. They just sort of drop these things in, and it's not, you know, it's part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're only going to see this type of thing, this type of product placement, get better. I was at a theater the other day, and you know, watching trailers for coming movies, and there was something that seemed like a trailer. It went on about 10 minutes, and I thought, my goodness, I'm seeing the whole movie. Well, in fact, I was. It was a 10-minute slick for BMW. It was great, and it wasn't one of those little short films they did on the internet a few years ago. This was in theaters, and it was great. And you know what? People were watching.
Mm-hmm.
That's only the beginning of what we're going to see.
We really are in our infancy in product placement, and I agree with you. Integration and integrating the product in an effective way with the storyline becomes the challenge. And, you know, the opposite of that, I guess, Melanie, and you've written a little bit about this, is the restaurant, which was a program on last, when was it, on last spring?
Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah.
How quickly we forget.
Yeah,
and,
well,
and
I keep trying to forget.
It was such a terrible show.
Yeah, I keep trying to forget because it was really in-your-face product placement, wasn't it?
You know, I'm actually glad the restaurant happened because it's the only reason we will ever mention that show going forward is when we're talking about bad product placement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hopefully, you know, there will be no more of that. Because you know what? We don't have patience for that stuff. Mm-hmm. Nobody does. And we're not going to put up with it. So, you know, the challenge is for companies with, you know, these companies have the money to produce, you know, good entertainment if they're going to get into that business to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about Donnie Deutsch earlier in the hour, and we had Donnie on, and he described how to do an effective product placement and how not to do an effective product placement. And I followed up with a question of, it sounds like the not-to version you just described, you described the restaurant, which, of course, Deutsch had Coors and Mitsubishi both placed in that particular program. And, of course, he did a really nice tap dance during that follow-up question. But
hey, he just did it himself. He, Donnie and his agency were featured in an episode of The Apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reality show with Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, it worked. You know, it was a huge product placement for Deutsch
mm-hmm.
and for the client they were talking about at the time. But you know what? You know, it was good TV.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to do it.
I agree. And I couldn't agree more in the fact that Queer Eye really is the showcase example of how to integrate product into a storyline
right.
and make it work, because you know it's really subtle, but yet it works with what they're talking about.
Let's continue our conversation here in just a minute with Melanie Wells, senior editor of Forbes magazine out of New York, with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe on the Advertising Show.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Oh, he was rude, what is the night, wasn't he? Coffee?
That's another funny joke.
Oh, Mrs. Olson, I just can't make good coffee.
Judy, good coffee is no problem with Folgers.
Folgers
is mountain grown.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe. That's back when coffee was just a problem. You know, this is a long time ago, in the 60s and the 50s.
Mrs. Olson.
Yeah. And she solved everything.
Mrs. Olson reminds me of Sue Johansson on Talk Sex.
She does.
On Oxygen.
You're right. Maybe that is her, and she changed her name and moved to Canada or something.
It's a good, if you ever want to give up sex, watch Talk Sex with Sue Johansson on Oxygen Network. You'll never do it again.
That's called birth control, right?
It's called your grandmother giving you sex advice.
I understand. Melanie Wells, senior editor of Forbes magazine. You know, I told you before that Melanie did an article with Richard Branson. And Branson, a long time ago, I remember reading years and years and years ago when he was doing the ballooning stuff across mm-hmm. the Atlantic. And there was no connectivity there because the airline didn't exist at that point. But it was real interesting. That was in a... The National Geographic, they covered that.
Is he trying to go worldwide or just across the Atlantic?
Just across the Atlantic.
And he didn't make it, did he?
He's tried several times, I think, and I don't think he's ever made it. No.
But, you know, if you have his kind of dough, you got helicopters, you got boats down there, you got everybody following you.
He was never in danger, but it is what he did was pretty dangerous.
And speaking of ballooning, Forbes is a balloonist.
It is?
Malcolm.
And he was also a big proponent of motorcycles, as I recall.
Oh, yeah, too. Harley Davidson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, did you ever get on the back seat of that with Malcolm?
Sadly, Malcolm had passed on by the time I got here, so I haven't seen a motorcycle around, but we still have his Fabergé eggs a few more months.
What a great guy and a wonderful person to get behind a publication like Forbes.
Yeah.
And,
so was Malcolm a pilot, a balloon pilot, or did he just... fly with somebody else flying it?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I know he flew everywhere, but I assume he had someone else actually doing the flying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's talk a little bit about TiVo. Is it, you know, we all know what TiVo is, and if you don't know, go to your internet and look it up, folks. Is TiVo as big of a threat to advertisers and agencies as people make it out to be, Melanie?
You know, for such a small company, you know, it's certainly got amazing name recognition, doesn't it?
It really does.
About TiVo is, you know, there are only 800,000 people in the U.S. who use TiVo, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a device that lets them pick their shows and record their shows, and this is what scares advertisers, of course, skip the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And I think apparently 80% of the people who have TiVo skip their commercials. And, you know, some people say, look, TiVo's nothing. We don't have to worry about it. Some people in, you know, television. But, you know, I know a very prominent ad buyer who swears by it, you know, secretly. So TiVo in and of itself is not that big a threat. However, the companies that are starting to offer similar things, like the cable and satellite services that are offering cheap digital video recording features, are the players you have to worry about, and that is really going to be what impacts TV advertising going forward.
Yeah, what I find interesting is you mentioned the 800,000 current users or early adopters of what I would call, and, you know, people try to make assumptions about the general public based on the activities of 800,000 early adopters. My thought is that these folks are not Joe Sixpack out there. They're usually affluent people that can afford this technology in the early stage. But what I find very interesting is the potential of TiVo getting into the research and ratings business as it relates to TV viewership. Any thoughts on that, Melanie?
Hey, look, Nielsen. AC Nielsen certainly deserves some competition.
Mm-hmm. Boy, not a fact.
You know, I mean, Nielsen's a dirty word in the TV and advertising business right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hey, look, if TiVo is going to compete in its business going forward with all the competition that is springing up around its core business now, it should get into something else. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And measurement? Please, let's have somebody else who can do some of this measurement
and do it
accurately.
Same thing with Arbitron, too, in many ways.
Radio, yeah.
Sure.
I agree.
Yeah.
And for those that may not realize, you know, when you have a TiVo technology hooked up to your home, the TiVo folks can see you flipping channels. They see where you sit and how – not sit in the living room, of course, but how long you sit on a particular program, whether you're skipping commercials, et cetera. And no more questions about ratings and who's watching what. You know that because you see the activity happening right there with your with them in home office, I guess, at TiVo. But, the networks were saying, hey, Nielsen, it must be you guys because they're claiming that we're losing 18 to 34-year-olds. As far as men, yeah,
right,
audience.
Right.
And I don't know. What do you think? Is it the ratings or is it viewership?
We don't have time to get that answer to the question.
Well, we'll hold that till next hour.
Please do. And I heard you take a breath there, Melanie, so don't hold your breath, okay? Because
yeah.
You might pass out. We'll be back in just a minute with more of the advertising show this hour. And then, of course, Melanie rejoins us next hour with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Colgate toothpaste, the tooth toughener. How can that be? Well, it contains advanced MFP fluoride. It's the only toothpaste that does, and it does toughen tooth enamel. With tougher enamel, the children won't have so many cavities.
That's a classic spot from Arthur Godfrey. We lost another great pitch man, Jack Parr, this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Parr was the original host of The Tonight Show years and years and years
ago. He kind of reminds me, of course, and protege of Johnny Carson, but he kind of even looks like Johnny Carson a little bit.
Who, Jack Parr did?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. I think that was on purpose, too.
Probably. There's a great person to, you know, pattern yourself after, that's for sure.
No kidding. Yeah. So he's one of the beginning. And Godfrey, too.
Arthur Godfrey?
Well, Godfrey was Today Show? Was he on the Today Show? Was that somebody else?
No, you're thinking Carraway.
Yeah.
But Arthur Godfrey did have his own TV programs, but came up through radio and truly the absolute best when it comes to advertising
man.
And pitching. Yeah,
sure,
and that's
absolutely.
A good example of it.
Well, we were talking today, actually earlier this week, about a pitchman and trying to figure out who is the spokesperson for Home Depot or Lowe's, and I'm trying to think. It's an actor. I think it's Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of those is so. Don't be afraid to get an actor for your voiceover talent. They do a very good job. They're paid to do that, and they're for professionals. It's not a bad way to go.
Which is interesting, kind of like a plug for next week's show, which you have sitting there in front of you, which is a great company
mm-hmm.
that licenses music, of mm-hmm. which many that you've heard that we're going to be playing on next week's show. And Creative License, I believe, is the
Creative
name.
License yeah. is the name of the company.
Out of
and
New
the guest
York.
Is Kevin Kierman.
Yeah, should be
McKierman,
a good show.
I should say.
Yeah.
We do good advertising and bad advertising. We actually call it the Advertising Showcase as opposed to good advertising. But this week, what we're looking at is something that is not so good. This is not to pan the advertiser. It is just simply to make it a little bit easier for you to do some good advertising.
And now it's time for the bad advertising item of the week.
Although it really is fun to bash the advertisers
well,
sometimes.
Yes. Sometimes too easy.
Yes.
But, you know, this week, right now, this weekend, AdCritic.com was featuring a preview of the Super Bowl commercials.
Right.
So I went to AdCritic.com and did a little preview and came across one that will or was airing on the Super Bowl this weekend, depending
sure.
on when you're listening to this, because
exactly.
this is archived, so it could be next week. But mm-hmm. anyway, the spot is for Subway, and the title was Misunderstanding. Of course, Subway's agency, Fallon Worldwide, out of Minneapolis. Spot was specifically designed for the Super Bowl and opens with a lady offering perfume samples in a department store and type setting, and a customer standing at the counter turns around and sprays perfume in the perfume demonstrator's face, okay, and then you have a transition to an outdoor scene where a father is helping his son fly a kite, and a person comes up to them, and at this point he's holding a soft drink with a lid on it and a straw coming out. So now we're beginning to kind of bring the product mm-hmm, in, but not
right.
quite there yet. And the guy with the soda in his hand pulls his pair of scissors out and clips the line on the kite, and he looks at the stunned father and son, and he says, "It's okay. I had Subway." Okay, and then now we have a voiceover where the announcer right. says, "No, what we meant was that you ate a good low-fat diet at Subway. It occasionally is okay to eat bad, not act bad."
Oh, okay.
So they're reintroducing that element, and music is beginning to pick up, and the spot has similar creative approaches along those same lines. But what I found interesting and why it is the bad advertising item of the week is as they transition from that particular scene on into the rest of the spot, mm-hmm. it reminds you very vividly of the American Genius campaign by Budweiser.
Right.
Do you remember that campaign, which was
so,
on
yeah.
radio originally, and then they brought it into television?
Sure. Yeah, Real American.
Yeah, Real American, exactly. And as the spot continues, the voiceover now says, "So you, Kelly, in Memphis, stop spilling on bad tippers." And then he transitions to Lori and Viking. Stop trying to bring back bad art. And this is where, again, it kind of takes on the similar creative line as Budweiser, American Genius spots. The voiceover continues to go along these same lines. And then Subway mentions that it has 7 sandwiches under 6 grams of fat, and also mentions the Atkins-friendly diet, which they've been doing since first of the year.
Right.
The 60-second spot, which is interesting because Super Bowl's spots, usually run 30, but this is a 60, and it has the typical humorous approach, which I think most Super Bowl spots have nowadays. The part I had the biggest problem with, as I already mentioned, was the fact that the spot's creative strategy was a bit distracting because of its similarity to Budweiser's American Genius campaign. And when you see a commercial, Ray, I don't know about you, but when you see a commercial during the Super Bowl or any other time and the spot follows a similar line of another commercial's creative execution, there's a tendency to think about the other commercial as opposed to remembering, what you're seeing before you. Your mind goes back to the originator
right.
of the idea as opposed to remembering the, the copier.
Sure.
So it's an okay spot, but I thought that they really didn't have to do much to get away from the Budweiser campaign and copy
yeah.
that. And when you see it, if you haven't, you'll say, yeah, that does remind me of the Budweiser American Genius campaign.
It's really surprising that a client like Subway would do something like that too, isn't it?
It really is. And again, I got to tell you, when you see it, you'll say that is a direct
rip-off.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. Don't do that. That's one of the worst things an advertiser can do is be a copycat,
especially
on a local advertising basis.
Exactly. And, it's interesting because the meow meow thing.
Yeah.
We had Jerry Delafimino on, and they're still using that. So sometimes it's just using a good idea and staying with it, which they had all along.
Sure. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth continues next hour with our special guest, Melanie Wells, senior editor at Forbes Magazine. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. Back next hour.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
And it's hour number two here on The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. If you're with us last hour, that's great. If you're not, we were talking with Melanie Wells, senior editor at Forbes Magazine, and we'll rejoin that conversation here in just a little while. Got, Mary Lou Quinlan coming up. We're talking about mom's family values. Andy Borowitz is going to join us this hour, too. And we've got the Wacky World of Marketing, too, at the bottom of the hour. So we'll join Melanie in just a few moments. But right now, boys and girls, it's Ray and Brad.
Hmm. So, you know, Ray, I was you're a basketball fan, aren't you?
No.
No?
No.
Well, me neither. No, actually, if I get Rockets tickets, I'll go to a local Houston Rockets game.
Sure.
But I'm not a big follower of basketball. But as the midseason All-Star game break approaches, TV outlets carrying the NBA –
yeah,
continue to attract bigger ratings and better demos than years previous. For the first half of 2003-2004 season, the NBA has grown its audience on both TNT and ESPN across most demographics, including young men. So memo to network executives, get off Nielsen's back. We've found the lost 18 to 34 men. They're watching basketball. But, yeah, apparently NBA is picking up this year.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I'm not surprised.
Maybe Yao Ming in Houston.
In Houston is good. Well, we had Hakeem Olajuwon there.
We did, and now we have that coach that was playing for the Knicks, and now he's sitting on the bench with us.
Yeah.
And I'll think of his name in a moment. That's how big a fan we are. We can ask Melanie. Maybe she's a basketball
fan. She's probably a better fan. No, I don't watch much sports on television at
no.
all. I'd rather get out there and do something.
True.
I'm not a big football fan or baseball fan either, but I do like to watch golf.
Very
exciting.
Now, that's an activity that, yeah.
No, it's a good activity.
Well,
it's fun.
My wife's grandmother, who doesn't get out as much as she used to because she's in her 90s,
mm-hmm.
loves to watch golf.
Well, good.
So it gives her a little, you know, outing without going anywhere.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
It's very nice. So.
Open the window, you can kind of feel the breeze in Hawaii.
There you go.
The Hula Open.
There you go. Hey, let's check in with Mary Lou Quinlan. Let's talk about family values here on The Advertising Show.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
Recently, I was speaking at a conference to several hundred female sales leaders who must recruit other women to sell. One of the sales leaders asked me, "What's with these younger women today? They seem to be so kid-focused, they can't put any time into their selling. A lot of them quit because they have to be at all their kids' activities." As marketers trying to reach today's moms, maybe my answer to her will be helpful to you. Moms today are different. I've asked them to fill in the blank on this statement. Compared to my own mom, I am more blank with my kids. Their answers? I'm more involved, more active, more concerned about my kids. They see their roles as much more intense. Consider that the last generation of moms, now in their 50s or 60s, was the first to try to balance work and home. They went to work at jobs with very little support or role models, and the stress to do it all took its toll. These new moms think, "I don't want to be as stressed as my mom was. I want to be there for my kids." Not to mention, they're raising children in a more challenging world. Why does this matter? Don't underestimate how conscientious women are about protecting their kids' values. There's a reason that women rebelled against the lingerie ball at the Super Bowl. It wasn't just about their own revulsion. It was about their kids.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Good advice from Mary Lou on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. Family values, getting connected with your family is important. You know, I think I'm a brand new grandfather, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got
I can see myself being a lot more involved than
when you were
our grandparents. I don't recall a lot of involvement there, and I think that's true with a lot of people as well.
Today, and people are living longer, so they're having a chance to be involved in their grandchildren's lives.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So,
you know, guess who's friends with Mary Lou? Guest, Melanie Wells. Yeah, they're dear friends.
Really?
Yeah. So we're going to have to be on our best behavior.
They won't talk about each other, will they? Probably not.
Well, we'll
see.
Unless
we can
convince
them.
We'll do a little, little marketing.
You mean like, Melanie, Mary Lou said this about you.
And then we'll do the opposite.
For Mary?
Yeah. Just kind of start a rumor of some sort.
No, they're friends.
They are friends.
Speaking of friends, Argarg. The series finale, that's due in, when is it, May 6th, I guess. They turned it into a 60-minute program.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 60-minute program.
More spots, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the spots, 2 million. They're largely sold out. Mm-hmm. This is better than the Super Bowl. Isn't that amazing?
It seems like every finale, whether you want to go back to...
MASH.
Yeah, which was, you know, that was an interesting finale there. That was kind of a tearjerker.
Yeah, it was.
Then you have Seinfeld, which was a big finale. It was getting a couple million as well per spot. And then now Friends. The days of having a blockbuster like that are fast coming to an end, apparently. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the as much as we hate to say it, the Fox American Idol, for example, has had a stunning performance again this year, and advertisers are now beginning to give networks their blessings to do more non-scripted or more reality-type TV programming.
Right.
And as much as you and I may not really care for such reality TV programming, it's been suggested that in this high-tech world that we live in, and with information being more at your fingertips, that people, viewers, want more of a sensibility to come across with programming that's more current, more like right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about product placement before with these. And you consider some of these home improvement shows as reality programming
as well. I think it was really the precursor to all of that, wasn't it?
Because I think you're right.
Hammering something on the wall there, and you come back next week, and now the door's up, and then the next week we're putting the walkway in. And
it's my kind of reality show.
And then, you know, where that guy kept keeping his screwdriver always bothered me. It is radio.
As long as it doesn't fall down or he doesn't fall down.
Well,
right,
could be talking about an operation at that point.
That would be true. And that's another great reality show that used to be on Lifetime. They used to show operations. There was a show called Operation.
Really?
The Operation. And they went in and they showed start to finish operations.
And now it's the makeover program that they have on the network.
Yeah. So it's interesting what we have to watch and be entertained by. Melanie Wells will be joining us here in just a few moments on The Advertising Show. Melanie is a senior editor of Forbes magazine, and she is in New York City this weekend.
I think you and I have often said here on The Advertising Show that the original reality show was The Gong Show.
Yes. Or Candid Camera, actually.
Could be Candid
Camera.
But yet I don't think Candid Camera was, you know, reality participant. They didn't really know
they were right.
The Gong Show, they knew. I used to watch the Gong Show. I used to love
the Gong Show. It's where all those people who were stars at one point went and basically lived their lives as a panel.
I was in college then, so it was, you know, usually in a smoke-filled room.
There you go. That's a good place, I would imagine. Not good for you, though, is it?
No.
Melanie Wells up next with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. Melanie is senior editor of Forbes magazine, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Good morning. Are you not my daisies?
Right, Mother Nature. They're Chiffon's new daisy servers. Taste.
Oh, it's my sweet, creamy butter.
Nope, it's new Chiffon margarine. Chiffon has the fresh churned flavor of butter.
It's Chiffon margarine, not butter. Oh, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
That was one lady that you never really wanted to get angry at you, Mother Nature, you know? Mm-hmm. A classic spot from from Chiffon Margarine here on the Advertising Show. Melanie Wells, our guest today, senior editor of Forbes magazine. Before joining Forbes in 99, Melanie spent 5 years as a business reporter and a marketing columnist for the money section of USA Today in New York. She worked for Gannett at that point, right? And prior to that, Melanie was a writer and columnist at Advertising Age, where she's got a bunch of dirt on Scott Donatan, I guess.
True.
No, but she won't tell us, so that's we won't go there. Melanie, thanks for being on the Advertising Show today.
Great to be here.
You know, your bio says that you did a piece examining so-called cult brands. Does that have anything to do with Jim Jones popcorn?
I've never heard of Jim Jones.
Well, he's that guy that was over there in Africa. You know, they had him drink all the Kool-Aid, which we now say.
Maybe Jim Jones Kool-Aid. But
well, right. Hey, in your bio, it also says that you were on the Today Show. When were you on the Today Show, Melanie?
You know, when I was at USA Today after the Super Bowl, actually. You know,
she was actually one of those people outside the window. She was waving.
Oh, gee. Well, then we've been on too, Ray.
Yeah, really. Go ahead.
So what was the topic? What were they talking to you about?
You know, Super Bowl, I mean, I hate to give another publication a plug, but USA Today has the ad meter, Super Bowl ad meter that it runs every year,
sure,
where they sort of rate, you know, the popularity of the different Super Bowl commercials. And so that gets a lot of, you know, play. And the Today Show, when I was there, asked me to come on the next day and talk about the best, most popular commercials of that particular year. I think they may still do that.
Yeah, they do that. And we had Bernice Connor on a few weeks ago talking about the Super Bowl. And you know, that's always bothered me because, you know, who's going to log on to their website and vote for the best or worst Super Bowl spot as opposed to those in the industry that might have some semblance of understanding of whether a marketer is actually reaching their objectives and doing a decent creative execution. It's a lot of advertisers today, Melanie, shy away from the Super Bowl because of the potential criticism they may receive from their spots, don't you think?
Sure, some shy away from it, but I mean, so many are willing to shell out, you know, $2.3 million for 30 seconds to be there. That that's kind of astonishing, really.
I agree, and yet, frankly, the 2.3 I think is well worth every penny when you get advertisers not only doing a great execution and getting talked about after the Super Bowl, but gosh, what other venue do you know where people actually pay attention to the commercials?
Hey, look, you know, I never watched the game. I just watched the commercials, and you know, this year Procter & Gamble, you know, got involved for the first time, and they've gotten a lot of publicity for that. I mean, who normally talks about P&G advertising?
Right. P&G, one of the biggest advertisers in the world, is finally getting around to doing Super Bowl commercials. We talked about TiVo last hour, and interestingly enough, if you look at some of the statistics, you'll find that some of the most replayed items during the Super Bowl for those that have TiVo are, in some cases, commercials. Did you know that, Melanie?
You know, it's a great place talking about, you know, guys 18 to 34. If they're anywhere, you know, if they're ever watching TV, they're watching it during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, was that such a surprise, Melanie, when you heard that the erosion of the 18 to 34 male demographic, the fact that networks weren't reaching them?
Well, no. Duh.
Yeah.
You know, don't we all know that youngish guys, young and youngish guys, are, you know, playing video games, they are on the Internet, they're, I don't know what they're doing on the Internet, but, I mean, they're doing just about everything but watching television.
Yeah, the competition for reaching young people today, there are so many more channels of entertainment to go to, and I guess it's the challenge of network television to figure out how to get them back to the screen if they're going to do that. About a year ago, C.J. Fraley, advertising chief at General Motors, gave a talk at an advertising event, and he mentions during this talk that he felt that advertising holding companies have become soft and flabby, and mentioned that many of the ad agencies that were owned by so many holding or by a few holding companies nowadays were not as creative as they once were. Do you agree with that, Melanie?
You know, whenever there's an economic downturn, marketers start looking for someone to blame when sales soften, and inevitably their agency or agencies get some of that blame. You know, and often, you know, big agencies are criticized as being too slow moving. During the last downturn in the early 90s, back when I was at Ad Age with Scott Donatan, Coke, as you may recall, caused a big stir when it committed agency adultery by hiring Talent Shop Creative Artists Agency to create ads for Coke Classic.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, and so GM is sort of doing the same thing, if you will, you know, making that same complaint. But we are seeing more big marketers like Burger King, which you guys mentioned earlier, saying, you know what, I'm desperate. You know, I need great creative, and I'm not getting it from the big shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're hiring smaller outfits like Crispin Porter, which, you know, Burger King went to help them get it.
Crispin Porter, who really made a name for themselves with the Mini Cooper campaign, and you talked about a down economy. Do you think advertisers are not taking as many risks during a down economy as they would during a more robust economic time?
They're definitely not taking as many risks. First of all, they don't want to spend, you know, a lot of money on marketing or advertising. We've certainly been seeing that in the past few years. But, you know, you will see a bold few turn to, you know, interesting new things that don't necessarily cost a lot of money, but could be even more effective at sort of spreading the word about their products. So, you know, I mean, this is not a time for risk-taking, by and large, for most companies.
But yet the in 2004, we're coming up with new channels, new ways of doing things. You wrote an article on kidnapping, I should say, and it's all about an assembled stealth sales force of teenagers, some 280,000 strong. And do we have time to talk about this, Ray?
We've got about a minute and a half.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about what that group is all about, and then we're going to get into greater detail during the next segment.
Oh, okay. This is Procter & Gamble very quietly has put together a stealth sales force of kids aged 13 to 19, 280,000 of them to be exact, and that's about 1% of the nation's teenagers, to help P&G kind of push products, talk up products among their friends and family. This is, you know, something P&G is doing as they look for ways to reach people beyond traditional advertising. And this goes back to one of the, you know, it's a risk, but it's not as expensive as traditional advertising. And we're going to see more of this. You know, when P&G gets involved in something like TV advertising in the early days, more will follow.
And what I found interesting in your article, and that's in the current issue of Forbes, is that they are actually viewing this new marketing component, if you will, called Tremor, as a separate profit center, I guess, for P&G, where they're inviting advertisers outside and marketers outside of the P&G family to access this same group that you're describing.
Yes, this is very unusual for Procter & Gamble. This is one of the first times in P&G's history that it has, you know, sold a marketing service to other companies, you know, including a competitor, Kraft, which competes with P&G and coffee, is using this network sometimes. So this is very unusual for P&G, and they say, you know, that in 2004 it will be profitable.
The Advertising Show here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We're talking with Melanie Wells, senior editor of Forbes magazine. Brad, what is the next question that you're going to ask Melanie?
Well, you're just going to have to wait for that.
Okay.
But it pertains to that same subject we were just talking about.
Does it?
Because you can't really cover that in just a few minutes.
That's good. All right. We'll be back in just a minute. We've got the Wacky World of Marketing coming up in next, a matter of fact. So stay with us.
It's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Germany, where a pair of scientists have become early frontrunners for the 2004 IG Nobel's annual awards handed out for eccentric research thanks to their work in calculating the pooping power of penguins. These flightless birds are known to expel their feces with great force in order to prevent their waste from fouling their feathers and their nests. And leaving no turd unstoned, Victor Benno Meyer and Joseph Gall of International University Bremen have now figured out the amount of rectal pressure required by the birds to perform this feat. The British Weekly commented, "To what use this information will be put is unclear." And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
What is this, a sleepwalking concert? Where's your last jazz? Come on, kid. Wake up.
Thanks. I beat it, Dad.
If you need waking up, slap on some skin bracers.
There you go. A line that really ties in with the product there, a classic spot. Thanks, I needed that. There you go. Men in skin bracer. Good spot. Good spot. And as we continue our conversation here on The Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Our guest today is Melanie Wells, senior editor of Forbes magazine, as we get back into the conversation.
Yeah, Melanie, before the break, we were talking about, I just call it a combo stealth and viral marketing effort that P&G has underway and frankly has had underway since 2001, which in effect is a group of some 280,000 teenagers assembled across America, where they utilize this group called Tremor, by the way, as a marketing component within P&G, and they utilize this group as a means to really market products through this particular group of young kids that can influence other young kids to purchase or become aware of products that are both P&G related and in some cases outside of the family of P&G. Why are they deciding just now, Melanie, to talk about this unique marketing concept called Tremor? And they kept it quiet for so long. It's only been around since 2001. Why does P&G decide to talk about it now?
Well, you guys mentioned before the break that they are selling this this unit as a service to other marketers. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're just trying to you know, they want to get some exposure and drive up a little more business.
And some of those other advertisers, by the way, as mentioned in your article, is AOL, Coca-Cola, Kraft Foods, and Toyota Motor Company. Give our audience a little sense, if you would, Melanie, of an example of how P&G or some other company might use this group of some 280,000 young kids to get a product out into the marketplace.
Okay. DreamWorks SKG, the movie studio, has used Tremor a couple of times, most recently for its new movie, Win a Date with Pat Hamilton, mm-hmm. which is a teen flick. They started several months ago sending the kids information about this movie. I think they sent them sort of a bit of a script or a synopsis of the plot to, you know, all 280,000 kids just to say, hey, check this out. They ask for feedback about a logo. They sent the kids, you know, several different logos they were considering and invited the kids to give them their feedback. They did the same, I think, with trailers when they were thinking about those and publicity shots for the movie stars. Now, whether or not DreamWorks really cared about what the kids chose or said, I mean, they were much more interested in getting these kids to talk to their friends about this movie. And closer to the time the movie came out, they invited these kids in urban areas to sneak peeks of the flick. And by the time the movie, you know, opened a few weeks ago, some of these kids told me, you know, that they were very excited to take their friends to this movie that they had had, you know, a role in helping, you know, promote or get out or, you know, the logo they helped pick. I mean, it really generated some excitement. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works. It's very simple, but it's as simple as getting the kids involved, asking their feedback, and, you know, getting them excited and getting them to want to talk about it.
Is this a bit of an outgrowth of the famous book that has just, I say famous book, best-selling book that's been out a few years, and it is
Malcolm Gladwell's
Yes.
Tipping Point.
Tipping Point. Thank you. Should never have had that extra margarita last night, right?
it's sort of part of that. I mean, certainly, you know, the effectiveness of word of mouth marketing has been known for a long, long time. I mean, people who sort of keep track of this sort of thing talk about the spread of hybrids corn seed in, you know, rural Iowa among farmers in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time it was really studied, word of mouth. And hybrid corn seed, in case you were wondering, spread very quickly because farmers were talking about it. So since then, you know, companies have been paying more attention to it and trying to engineer it. And that's, you know, that's a big difference now. You know, Malcolm Gladwell in his book talked a lot about sort of things that happen organically.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening more now is companies are trying to actually engineer this type of word of mouth. And you know what? It's working.
Right. And Gladwell does mention in The Tipping Point about how, for example, Nike tennis shoes might have taken off in the ghettos of New York or L.A. because kids started wearing them there, and before you know it, they're all, you know, wanting the hip and cool things. And we're going to talk a little bit more about we still have some time. We have about
a minute.
Just as a sense of reference here, $175 billion on products will be spent by teens this year, and yet Jim Stengel, P&G's global marketing officer, in your article, Melanie, suggests that mass marketing model is dead. Do you agree with that? Is that a little over the top?
The mass market, the mass marketing model is on life support. I mean, what people seem to respond to more now, and what companies want to do, is to create more, you know, targeted, more niche appeals. They want people to want to receive marketing messages, and they want to invite them into their homes. And this is part of that. I mean, P&G is using these trimmer kits to really get inside homes in a way that works, it seems, a lot better than, you know, traditional TV advertising.
You know, and it's been mentioned that TiVo may be eventually a delivery system whereby people will actually
subscribe.
Yeah, they'll say, well, we want to learn more about, you know, maybe a P&G product or whatever the case may be.
And now it's a great idea.
Yeah, it is a good idea.
It's What's to Come, and Melanie Wells will continue the conversation with Melanie in just a moment, senior editor at Forbes magazine with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
These are the three largest selling soft drinks. Now, let's have a look and see what makes them so popular. As you can see, this one is a cola. It looks like a cola. It tastes like a cola. This one's a cola, too. It's brown like a cola, sweet like a cola. Now, this one is the Un-Cola. It doesn't look anything like a cola. It doesn't taste anything like a cola.
Interesting how spot translates to radio. Can't see the pictures, obviously.
But you get it.
A spot for 7-Up, classic spot on The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsythe, back with senior editor of Forbes magazine, Melanie Wells.
Yeah, Melanie, it seems like everybody that's a writer for a trade publication or a business book like your own has written a book on their subject, advertising or marketing. When would we expect to see a book out by Melanie Wells?
Boy, the pressure's on.
Have you thought about it?
Let me get back to you on that.
No, well, she can't do it on company time, though.
It's hard to, you know, it's hard to get into fresh territory there.
Yeah. Well, I'm opening a literary division at my company as a reason I ask.
Oh, have well, you, then yes, I will.
Yeah. Have you read any great books on advertising lately, since we're talking about books?
Yeah, you know, I read How Customers Think by Gerald Zaltman, who's at Harvard. And he's actually somebody who's done a lot of interesting brain research. That was a good book.
I'm familiar with that book. Have not read it, but it was sent to Ray and I here at the show. Miles Nadel, I think a name that a lot of people will be hearing more and more about in months to come, is the head of a company called MDC out of Toronto that just happens to be out of Toronto. It's traded on the NASDAQ, who wants apparently to acquire advertising agencies, not unlike Omnicom and WPP did throughout the 90s. What will we expect to be hearing about Miles and his company in the future?
Well, Miles is a guy few people know, but he's the fella to watch over the next year or so. Miles is from Canada, and he made a fortune, a personal fortune of about $75 million, I understand, in the check printing business. which is a boring business, but apparently very lucrative. But he, a few years ago, decided that there was money to be made in buying marketing service companies. And so he, in 96, 97, you know, bought a stake in Crispin Porter, which we've mentioned here, the Miami shop, Margiotis Fertitta and Weiss, a New York shop, and he is said to be preparing to acquire majority stakes in one or perhaps two, you know, high-profile agencies in the next little bit. You know, and the rumors are, you know, it could be Kirshenbaum Bond and Partners.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Cliff Freeman and Partners. But this guy wants to get into the ad agency business in a big, bad way.
Hmm. Well, and certainly if you look at some of the major agencies out there that are still independent, it's a fairly short list, isn't it?
It is a short list. And those two that I mentioned, Cliff Freeman and Kirshenbaum and Bond, certainly could have sold their agencies. In fact, Cliff did to Saatchi and then I guess bought it back during the last sort of go-around when Omnicom and IPG and WPP were snapping up shops. But they really did not – the guys who started those agencies did not like the idea of selling mm-hmm. their entire agencies to these big holding companies. What's different about Miles and his company, MDC, is that he's willing to let these guys keep a substantial stake in their agencies, which, you know, allows them to have control and stay involved. And that's going to be, you know, appealing to some folks who didn't sell out in the last go-around. And maybe, you know, they're also realizing they missed their chance to cash out in a big way.
Well, Ray spent several years in the big house for getting into some check printing issues, but it had nothing to do with a business. It was something he did on the side.
Yes.
But
right.
media consolidation, Melanie, I want to talk to you about.
Got about a minute left.
Yeah, and just about a minute left in this segment. Has media consolidation been good for consumers?
I think it probably has been. Yeah, I think it probably has been.
You do? And from a marketer standpoint, with large companies owning all of the various media channels out there, has it been good for marketing?
Well, yeah, that's not so good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we're going to see some changes going forward.
Mm-hmm. It is cyclical. They
sure
buy them all up and then
sure
they
is.
Sell them all away.
And they realize they've eaten too much and they need to thin down again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are some of those out there that don't own too many, just enough, basically, you know, like an Emmys or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Intercom.
On the other hand, some of the Clear Channel stations are holy camoli.
Right. So let's all go to San Antonio and just watch them fly out of the window up there.
Hey, Melanie, we are out of time, but want to say thank you for being a part of the advertising show this weekend. And Melanie is senior editor at Forbes magazine. Of course, you can go to Forbes.com, and right after the show, you'll be able to hear this interview here at theadvertisingshow.com without the commercial. So, Melanie, thanks again, and stay warm in New York City this weekend, huh?
Hey, thanks, guys. Wait, I have a question. Okay, thanks.
We'll hold that question.
All right.
Okay.
Back in just a minute.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Norman, there's something I have to tell you.
It's my breath.
No, it's your feet.
Summer 72. Norman Lasseter has hot, sweaty feet. His socks squeak.
I feel like the village beast.
When your feet feel hot and rotten, squeaking.
Ammon's foot cooler.
You just spray it on your tootsies and get the comfort you are seeking.
An original jingle from Ammon's and the creative house of Chuck Bloor, along with Ernie Anderson there, who did a lot of stuff with Chuck Bloor.
Some great stuff.
The late Ernie Anderson, he was good, too. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show, back with you for one more segment. We've got Andy coming up this segment as well, and we'll wrap up things. What do you think about John Dean and his speech? It's everybody's talking about it.
The screamer?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I think it's hysterical.
Well, you know, media jumped on that, which must have been a slow news day,
I guess.
And then, of course, all the comedians did,
yeah.
Leno and Letterman.
Yeah.
But, you know, he responded, I thought, pretty well, and he admitted that he was a little bit over the top. And, you know, it's refreshing to see a politician just, you know, come clean with that kind of thing.
I suppose, but there again, a lot of people are saying, would you want that man in office? Because
well,
he's going to lose it one time. They compared him to being a Jerry Carroll, the former disc jockey who starred in the long-running campaign for the store chain Crazy Eddie's.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Mays, the guy who sells everything from soup to nuts and everything in between. And they say that Dr. Dean might have a future in syndication. Move over, Dr. Phil.
Well,
poor Dr.
That's
Dean.
Interesting. Yeah, it was not a good day for him. And his rap is that he says he's just trying to pump up his group of young people that were supporting him.
Yeah. But somebody forgot to coach him, though.
Yeah.
Wasn't good.
He didn't draw the line.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Let's check in with Andy Borowitz here on the Advertising Show.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for the Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from the Borowitz Report.
North Korean dictator Kim Jong II got his first glimpse of Democratic presidential hopeful Howard Dean on the evening of the Iowa caucuses last week, and is now terrified by the former Vermont governor, associates of Kim revealed today. According to those sources, the ruthless North Korean had spent a long, hard day reprocessing nuclear fuel rods and was looking for something relaxing to watch on TV when Dean first appeared on the screen, delivering his bizarre post-Iowa concession speech. As Dean built to a crescendo, Kim appeared alarmed and agitated, the sources said. "Who is that madman?" the madman reportedly said. According to one of Kim's aides, there is only one way to describe the look on Kim's face when he was watching Dean. Pure, unadulterated terror. Kim's every waking moment is now haunted by his fear of Howard Dean, the aide revealed. At night, Kim gets out of bed and wanders the hallways in his PJs, muttering Dean's name, the aide said. Dean really gives him the willies. But according to Dr. Randolph Kessler, a professor of Far East Studies at the University of Minnesota, Kim's all-consuming fear of Howard Dean could impel the brutal dictator to abandon his nuclear program if Dean is elected president. Above all, Kim does not want to do anything that will set Howard Dean off, Dr. Kessler said. As far as Kim Jong II is concerned, getting Howard Dean mad is the nightmare scenario. In another positive development for the former Vermont governor, a new poll shows that most Americans would rather see Howard Dean in the White House than free to roam the streets.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from the Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
I think I accidentally called him John Dean before, but that's...
You did say John.
Sorry.
So that's okay. That goes to Nixon days.
When he would be a president, would it be Dr. President or President Doctor?
Turn your head and give us a speech.
A specimen. Anyway, so Andy has that all wrapped up, too.
Yeah. Well, John Dean was with the Nixon deal. You remember that.
Yeah, that's when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Little kid.
Hey, you know, I worked at a rock and roll radio station. Back in those days, in the 70s, you had to do public affairs programming.
Of course.
Remember?
Sure.
Which aired early on a Sunday morning when nobody heard it.
Exactly.
And sitting in the lobby was a guy named John Dean, the same John Dean from the Nixon deal. Mm-hmm. And he was promoting a book, and he was willing to be interviewed by, you know, the public affairs director.
Sure.
Again, that airs at 5 in the morning on Sunday.
Right.
And I walked into the studios, and I looked at him, and I thought, I walked in, and I walked on past him, and I got with my buddies back there, and I said, is that John Dean out there? You know, and it was really him. It was kind of cool.
The one that floored me is I walked into the lobby of our station in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and there was Tiny Tim.
Tiny, he's not so tiny.
He's not so tiny. He's like, whoa.
Yeah.
There's Tiny.
Did he have Miss Vicky with him?
No. No, that's long since Miss Vicky.
You know, I never plug a book. We mention a book if we have an author on here.
Go for it, though.
But I got to tell you, I received this the other day, Ray, and this is unbelievable. John Maxwell, There's No Such Thing as Business Ethics. He's written this book, and in his opinion, there's only ethics. Not just, you know, in other words, don't try to split it up between your personal life and your business life.
That's so true. Yeah.
The golden rule is the golden rule, and that's how you should conduct business and live your life. And it's a...
What's the name of the book again?
Well, it's There's No Such Thing as Business Ethics
okay.
by John Maxwell. And I don't know. I may figure out how to get him on the show. I'm just trying to figure out how to tie this into advertising.
Well, maybe. Maybe we can.
Yeah.
Next week, it's Kevin McKierman, and he is president and CEO of Creative License. And what you might ask is Creative License? Well, that's those music tracks that you hear on television and radio. That's what Creative License does. So we've got some samples of his work as well. That'll be next week on the Advertising Show. It's brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, the Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.